Got it. All right, it's 4:02, and I'd like to call the May 9th ESAC meeting to order. Item one, roll call. Fred Ariza.
Here.
Doug Jennings.
Here.
Trevor Ledbetter.
Here.
Susanna Shippers.
Here.
Ryan Thomas is absent, and Chris Yarder present. Let's go to item two. We don't have a big agenda today, so I'm sure that that's all okay with you guys.
Chris,
Yeah.
before we move to item two, can I introduce Sarah?
Oh, yes.
Sarah is our new executive assistant, and I'm going to let her say hi.
Hello, everyone.
And
Hello, Sarah.
so do we know where to find you?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes, I'm Carlos's executive assistant.
Oh, great. Great. All
Yes,
right.
ma'am.
So, thank you. So let's move on to item two for the Plan Tucson update. I would just like to interject that the last meeting we went to at the community center was a madhouse. But I saw Carlos and Frank. And who else was there from ES?
Trevor
Oh,
was there with his
Trevor?
students.
Oh, I didn't see you.
Oh, I saw Trevor.
Oh, okay. Darn. And there was someone else with Frank, I think.
Lisa Rotella. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. So that was nice. Did you want to just give a summary, Margo?
Well, Trevor can add. I would be interested in his comments because we never talked about it. This was called the cross-cutting issues,
Yes.
and there were two different actually overall there were three different rooms. It was quite nicely arranged in that way, and one room was all of the previously discussed group by the work groups. And so I looked for some of the things that we had added about waste management and trying to elevate some of that into the plan. I'm not sure we had any success. I don't think there was necessarily any changes. The second one was called the cross-cutting issues. And I went to the one on governance, the discussion on governance. And that was supposed to be about citizen participation, and there was absolutely no mention, for instance, of boards and commissions. The citizen participation part was pretty minimal. They tried to talk about it. The one table that I was at, unfortunately, the person who was doing it spent about half the time talking. He needed to learn that when you're the facilitator, you ask the question and then you shut up and let the other people talk. So he needed a little more training. And then the third one was on the growth management plan, which is where is Tucson going to grow? And yet they gave us, they had various sections about where things were going to grow, but they gave us no criteria. So we didn't know, did they just think the blobs in various places were aesthetically interesting? I mean, that's the most
That was
nasty.
the room with the red
That's
and
the nastiest one I could
green
think of.
dots, right?
Yes. And the other one was, there was no presentation of economics. So it didn't say that if you grew in the southeastern region, what the cost was going to be approximately ballpark, a million, 100 million, a billion, whatever, to put the infrastructure in. And that's where all the state land is. So, of course, that's where all of the developers are very anxiously, waiting to get their hands on that state land. The way I was discussing this with someone, they're saying, well, you'll be all around those prisons, and who wants to live that close to prison? So
And close to Los Reales. So
well,
This was our first introduction to this future growth scenario map. Right. And so next meeting, we're continuing that.
Yes. And then there are building blocks, which talks about the different densities. So like there's a big push. They had taken the area around the farms, the University of Arizona farm area, which is trying to make that a historic zone. And they were going to put it into mixed density as though their farms were going to disappear. And so there's been a lot of pushback on that particular area. But the worst thing was that there was absolutely no information, no guidance about the relative cost of moving into any of these, and no listing of the vacant land within the city. And in the past, that's been as high as 10 to 20% of the total city is vacant land. And so you can take a lot more density into that area. So that wasn't there. And what's the impact on us is, of course, how far are the garbage trucks or the trash trucks and the recycling trucks going to have to drive? How much, you know, development's going to come. But if we really sprawl out, it makes it much more expensive in terms of the infrastructure of roads, water, sewer, and our waste management trucks, our trucks that are dealing with that. So, you know, that is something where I think we might want to make some comments on. Anyway, there's a movement afoot to try to get to add a couple more months to some of the discussions of the individual policies, because if you look at the 2013 plan, which supposedly this new plan is being built on, 50% of the 2013 plan policies are not carried forward. There doesn't seem to be, obviously things change. Maybe they need to be massaged. Maybe they need to be updated or something. But there's no way that says, you know, this point, blah, 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 is already accomplished. And so it's dropped off. Or this one is massaged and shows up in this other area. Or this one has been done. There's none of that kind of map, so you can follow that. And they were trying to tell me about how, when I asked some of these questions, that, it was all there. And so I gave them one specific one, and they were trying to make them shorter. One very specific one, which was provide recreational activities for all ages and abilities. That's very short. The code word, all abilities, is very important to those of us who have special needs kids. And I asked them where that was, and they couldn't find it anywhere. So that's the kind of thing we're saying is being dropped out in waste management, some of the stuff on zero growth, some of the work, household hazardous waste is there, but some of these other things that we've been talking about or some implementation aspects that we've been thinking about is not really mentioned in the upcoming policy. So those are the things we are trying to track and to elevate so that waste management stays as an important part of the plan coming forward. And if you've read a city manager's memo, you know at the end, all of those policies are listed. And so it becomes important to have policies to promote the kinds of things we want to have happen.
Trevor, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I will agree. It was a bit of a madhouse. I think even had I been attending some of these sessions beforehand, the amount of information that was presented, whether it was the growth map or the policies, really in those two rooms, there was so much information. And to Margo's point, they had tried to boil things down, but there was too much in 30 minutes, even an hour, even 8 hours to meaningfully digest and really understand not only the consequences and how things are interconnected, but also to be able to make really provide educated feedback and input on so many of these things, which is just really unfortunate. And I think that beyond the fact that they didn't advertise this event anywhere, including on their own website, it's just so inaccessible unless you're going for one topic and that's the only thing you're there for. Otherwise, it's just so much. There's just so much covered, and it makes sense. It's the city of Tucson's multi-year master plan, effectively. So that was like the big thing of me walking away. I was just overwhelmed. There are certainly pieces from the ESAC side of things that are there. There are some things that are missing. I do think that there is a lack of this whole thing was about cross-cutting and how you sort of work across the different areas of the city of Tucson. And I didn't feel like there was a to Margo's point earlier. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, you just froze for a little bit.
Oh, sorry. Where did it cut off?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so to Margo's point earlier, you know, there are significant impacts from an environmental services perspective on sprawl. And I don't feel like there were strong connections about between that and the growth map, for example. And I think that there are also, unfortunately, old ways of developing or development that are being incorporated into this process, where, for example, they're looking at turning the area of like Grant and Campbell or Grant and Country Club into medium mixed density, something that looks like 4th Ave or University Boulevard or downtown, while also still planning for a 6-lane essentially highway through the center of that area. And those two, that car-centric infrastructure just doesn't mention for development. So I think that there are a lot of challenges there when it comes to just really thinking intentionally about how the city of Tucson and how we create a community that is more intentional, more equitable, more people-centric than car-centric. And I think a lot of that can support a lot of what environmental services does in terms of reducing homelessness, making it easier to provide the services that environmental services provides that aren't really being thought about really intentionally. So challenging, overwhelming, lots of missed opportunities. That's sort of the summary that I came away from that session with.
Well, there is a group and we're trying to get it slowed down, because one thing that Cesar Acosta said was that they're trying to hurry up and finish this section up before summer. And I mean, we could have stayed in one of those rooms all day and worked on the subject matter. So, yeah, I was really overwhelmed and I had notes that would help me and kind of had a heads up about what to look for. But still, it was just too much for me. So, but the next one, I believe.
14th of May.
Yeah.
And then so, that Saturday is 18th, I think it is 10 to 12.
And one of them is going to be virtual, the first one.
Yeah, that's the one on the 14th. That's the Tuesday evening.
You just want to sign in and see what's going on.
You got to get a reservation first.
Yeah. So, thank you. Let's move on to item 3, director's report. And well, this first item is one we've been looking forward to, the deputy director recruitment process.
Okay, Ms. Chris. So last time I was not able to participate at the last ESAC session because I was in interviews. So we did have a total of 16 candidates. Out of those 16 candidates, we had about 10 that met that did not meet the minimum qualifications for the position. Only six were able to meet those minimum qualifications. Two of those applicants were internal applicants. Internal, I mean, City of Tucson, and four were external candidates. So we went through the interviews. We essentially had the ranking. When we fill those high level positions, we need to run them through our bosses and the city manager's office. And so the direction that we got is let's basically hold off really in filling that position. We know it's needed, but there is some proposed realignments that are underway or being considered citywide. As we all know, the city manager, a new city manager is taking power or taking his role and responsibilities the first week in July. So there's maybe some realignments, reorganizations that may be occurring. And so we may be part of that. One of the things that it's on the works or it's really very high level on their end is really a lot of the stuff that is essentially related to climate. It's embedded in our shop. And so it's really looking at how do we shore that up beyond really what's really just environmental services. So the concern is really vehicle electrification, the zero waste roadmap, the continue with the renewable energy, essentially ensuring that we have the right folks or the right mix of folks really to implement the Tucson Resiliency Together climate action plan. And so that's really where the evaluation of the realignment is going to be taking place. So it's not that we don't need to fill the position. We do. It's really just it may be in a different configuration. Obviously, with those priorities being in mind, there is some really on that end, at least on the interim, there is some realignment internally to be able to maybe create an administrative position that would just oversee collections and would help us essentially staff that area in the interim. So to be brief is really, again, there's some possible realignments that are being considered that not only affect essentially the department, but outside the department. The intent is really to shore up the department where it's needed, but also at the same time, how do we address more of the longer term things that need to be looked at from a climate action perspective, EV electrification, vertical construction, project management, zero waste, and all the climate action initiatives that need to be looked at and how do we realign the department to meet those requirements. So that's where we added. So at this point in time, we're not moving forward with the recruitment in the as-is condition, but we are looking at what do we need to do internally to shore that area up to continue to operate and really fortify our positions as we move forward. You're muted, Ms. Margo.
We can't hear you.
Sorry. I said, wow, all that work and you end up there.
For a long time?
Yeah. How long is this? When is the realignment? I mean, is this a Tim Thamour idea so that when he takes over after the 1st of July, it's going to move forward? Or
so this has been going out on
a little bit more?
No, so this has been going on for a few months, but I don't think they had really pulled the trigger in terms of what they wanted to do. And I think it's to be in a definite answer, I don't think it's quite there yet, but it's really, what are we looking at that is we're probably looking at about in the next couple of months. So it's not forever. It's really just trying to be doing some shifts, doing some moves. I would say in the next month or so, within 2 weeks to a month, be able to make really some adjustments initially. And then once that's settled, once it's essentially is gelling, then really make an assessment in terms of how best to move forward down the road.
But I mean, the issue has always been, Carlos, that you have all these projects under you. In addition to the overall management of the department, I mean, there's the gas to energy, there is the you know, improving the recycling or the waste diversion, to be more broadly about it, where you need a person to really think about it from morning, moon, and night, you have so many different things that are going on that to deprive you of that upper level person to, or persons, you know, just seems to me slowing down the whole city's movement in this direction.
And Margaret, I got a great point. And I think the way they're looking at that is, it's not really, that is not only embedded in one position. So just replacing Pat's whole position is really, to your point, is really be able to realign the department and add the resources that are needed really to make sure that those areas are adequately staffed. So then adding more administrator high level positions beyond the mid-manager position to be able to be the leads for those initiatives. And that's where essentially the realignment comes in, is realizing that, yes, there's a lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of programs out there. We don't have all the folks in the mix. So therefore, let's try to shift those resources, not try to go out there, but realign it with it internally within the city, trying to and get them reassigned to the areas. And really to the areas, to the department, to make sure that we can get that going. And then once that's settled, then begin to fill those other high level positions to manage the overall project. But yes, to your point is, we need more, not just worker bees, but we need more folks that can really manage those high level projects. And that's really the process initially, really to get that moving now rather than later.
But you're assuming that those people already exist in the city. I mean, that's an amazing assumption that they're there and you just need to pluck them out. I mean, we've seen people move from transportation and Tanecki, we've seen her move and into the manager's office and then move over to housing and community development or housing. So I know that there's these pathways going through. Are there people sitting now in the manager's office as assistants who would move in and take these over?
All those things are being considered, Ms. Margo, to identify, for me to be able to identify and pinpoint those persons.
Sure. You don't want to do that.
I don't think I can at this point in time, or I don't know those, but I think that's really where they're coming from on that is really the feedback they're getting is exactly to your point is, there's a lot of stuff that has been funneled to the department, not in terms of really the management, the overall management of the department as a whole, in terms of the work that we do day in and day out, what other additional work has brought into the department, such as the homeless camp cleanups, and then all the other initiatives that are essentially taking place that are moving at getting some traction. They're moving, but they're not moving as fast as what we need to be. One of them is really the green fleet transition plan. We got essentially a lot of vehicles in the way. The vehicle electrification, that's another component of that. So there's multiple things, the zero waste stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that we have kickstarted, and I think they're moving, but they need to be more on a solid ground and really be spearheaded by certain individuals in order for them to move. And that's where the realignment comes in and shoring that up and also almost taking a sandwich approach. Let's do this. Let's bring that position up on top and then let's basically begin to squeeze the sandwich to be able to get us to where we need to be at.
So who's holding down the fort now? I mean, who's, because I know Pat did a lot. And right. Not everybody can do that job right away. It's a learning curve. But do you have people in house that are able to manage?
So on that it's we've been kind of like managing by emergency or by situation. Obviously, some things are really, and I'll be honest with you, there's things that fall through the cracks. There's things that we fall behind. There's things that we may not be doing. And I think those things we may not see that like right away, and we're probably going to see the effects of that in the next couple of months. So the way we shore that up is obviously I'm trying to do as much as I can on that. I'm trying to pick up that and also really share some of that responsibility and in the landfill, really more contact with Frank at the landfill. So that's an area that Frank that Pat used to oversee. Pat, again, interacting more with Lori from a code enforcement perspective, and then really allowing really for the superintendents really to take care of Luis Luna and Jose Montijo really taking care of the collections more on that side without really that oversight that Pat used to provide. Not as we still meet, we still go over that, but it's not as much as what we need to pay attention to. So there is some stuff that we're holding on, we're putting a band-aid on, holding on, but those are some of the things that I can't, it's not a short-term, I would say, problem, but certainly could be a medium to long-term problem if this continues for a longer period of time.
Because it's also the vision, you know, the vision of what zero waste could be. I mean, part of it's coming through this Plan Tucson, but ultimately, you know, in your shop, is the expertise to have that vision, to bring in all the information from all over the country as to what people are doing, for instance, for zero waste, for the fleet conversion to electric and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, it seems to me, where just promoting from internally doesn't get us very far.
Well, and I hope there's money, because the city's looking at some
I think
scary times. I mean, is this all going to come from the enterprise fund?
Yeah, we have, I think, less problems than other places. But
yeah.
And I think, Ms. Yarder, I think it's really, maybe that is part of the strategy too, is really look at realignment of some of those folks really to help us offset some of those financial challenges that we're going to face, not only this year, the next year, but the following year too as well. So I think there's a method to madness that we may not know all the details, but I think there is, in their minds, there is a method to the madness to all this.
Okay. Well, I don't want stuff to happen like that happened to code enforcement, because, you know, they're in pretty bad situation mm-hmm. right now. So,
right. So that's an area that essentially, that's another area that needs to be fortified. So one of the things that we were working on when Pat was still here was really create an administrator really for that group. Yeah. And so that is one of the positions that part of the strategy is one of the solutions is let's fill that position. Let's get a body in there that would help L'Oreal really manage essentially that group. And not only help her manage that, but really provide that interface between code enforcement, the neighborhood associations, and then citizens and the ward offices and police and fire, make sure that we're trying to be in front of things rather than be on the back end of things.
Okay. I hope someone's listening.
My next meeting, I can provide you probably between now and the next meeting, I can provide you more detail as it unveils and maybe give you an update in terms of where we at from a staffing perspective as well.
Okay, good. We'll look forward to that. Let's move on. Oh, were there any questions? Okay. Let's move on to the Holler Forum update.
So we had the Holler Forum last Wednesday or last Tuesday or Wednesday, I think it was last week, had a good participation. We had about 20 participants from the Tolman Nation, Liberty Disposal, Republic, Roloff Company, the school district, Waste Connections. So we had a good representative group that attended the forum. So the intent of the forum was really to provide all the users really an update on where we were, where we at, and where we're going. And so the update was that one is really the PAT amendment that we're going through the PAT amendment for the sustainability campus, what the intent to really of that amendment is, what it really entails. So we cover that extensively. We also providing them an update in terms of really where some of the projects were in the status, what are some of the things that are being currently underdeveloped, talk to them about the Bifusion building, talk to them about the design of the intersection improvements, talk to them about really setting aside land for a future MRF facility, talked about the field plan. So we gave him a good, Frank gave him a very good overview in terms of where everything's at right now. We'd also tell them that we're working on how do we develop a green diversion tipping fee. So that way it's an incentive really for them to segregate and just be able to bring us good green waste so for us to divert and compost. So we did briefly brought that up. Heard some comments in terms of what would it be on their end beneficial for them to separate the product under what parameters. And so we briefly talked about that. They did raise some issues, some concerns. One of the attendees brought up that we need to do a better job on maintaining our roadway system. We need to do a better job on doing dust control. And we need to do a better effort sometimes when on the tipping floor, that they have had some incidents that mattresses have caused some damages to their equipment. And so they just ask us really to pay a little bit more attention on the tipping floor. Overall, I think it was good participation, a good turnout, good feedback, good interaction. Asked him if it was really beneficial for us to continue to have those types of those types of meetings. They said it was. And so there was a little bit of follow-up questions that came out of that, that we still need to get back to them on that. But overall was good. So that's pretty much the update on that end.
Any questions for Carlos? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So let's move on to item four for the financial monthly report. And Maggie's here.
Oh, I'm here. Good afternoon, yep. Everyone. Okay. Sarah, did you enable me to share my screen?
Yes, ma'am, I did.
Thank you. Okay, I think it says you can see my screen. Is everyone, can you see the first report?
Yep.
Great. So we're looking at the report titled Environmental Services Fund 502 with the actuals as of May 3rd, 2024. You can see that for our collections, so that's the third column over, we've collected $57.8 million and from our services, and we've expended $48.1 million. This is just for the Environmental Services Fund only. And I had said last time that I would be hoping to provide an updated forecast, a quarter three forecast, and the timing, I do have updates to the forecast, but the timing of this fell, getting the report ready to get sent out to you and then having meetings with Carlos just to review the final forecast. I didn't completely update the forecast. So for June, we'll have we'll almost be done with the fiscal year. So my forecast will be really close to, I won't have much hard work to do there. But so I have updated the forecast, but one caveat. So I wanted to show you that I had forecast to do $70.2 million collected for the end of the fiscal year. And that would be at about $70.7 million for total expenditures. So the caveat again is this number here, the $10 million for the capital projects. I am working through a forecast because right now you can see that we only have about $1.7 million expended so far. So I think this number is going to go down quite a bit, probably by about $6 or $7 million, but I'll be able to tell you that by our next meeting, which means when we look at with the forecast, the way it is now shows the fund dipping into fund balance a little over $500,000. Once we're able to shave and we know how much we're going to shave off this capital construction forecast, that number is going, we're going to be in the green, not in the red, for fund balance, for fund 502. So that's good news. Any questions here on the Fund 502 roll-up?
Okay. We like the in the green.
Green's good, yes. Agreed.
But we don't like the red at the bottom.
No one does. So this is just by area. We have our administration, our Tucson Clean and Beautiful, et cetera. I don't think there are any standouts here. Again, $70.7 million. But again, the 10.9 for CIP will likely go down. We have some grants going right now, some EPA grants. We're wrapping up one, the Brownfields grant, and then we're getting ready to start a revolving loan fund grant. So we'll see some more activity there, particularly once we get into the new fiscal year. And code enforcement is going along well, and graffiti abatements as well. We have, I think we'll be at about $2.5 million for code enforcement for the year.
So one of the things is the plastic waste diversion and reuse. I assume that's the bifusion. There was no money ever in the budget for it, but we're going to spend about $275,000.
That's right. We have an agreement with Bifusion to make some payments based on milestones in them getting up and running with the buy blocks, and we've made two of those payments. The total commitment is that was approved by Mayor and Council is $1 million, but those the payments are triggered by performance milestones. So right now we've made those just two payments to them. I think it's $165,000 so far.
So in this upcoming budget, there will be a line for them?
Yes. What's going to be really nice about next year's budget is that we were able to kind of right size a lot of places where we had kind of funny. There was no way to plan for Bifusion because it wasn't known when the budget was built for this year. So that was always going to be a situation, but we have that built into the budget for next year. And same with vehicle purchases. We have that built in. We didn't have a good allocation for that. So that will help us look at our budget versus our actuals in a more meaningful way, I think, in the go forward.
And the recycling and waste reduction, I noticed, was budgeted at $3.3 million, but is only running at about $1
million. Yeah, I can't say why. I don't know why that allocation was made in that manner, Ms. Garcia. But you're right, it's just around what I think will be at about $1.3 million there.
So, I mean, we did
mainly
redo...
what posts there, sorry to cut you off, but mainly what posts there is our payments to Republic. Carlos, yeah. Did you have something to add? Carlos has his hand raised.
Ms. Margo, one of the things is, as you remember, if you look at how the budget was developed last year, it was really big bundle of several accounts or several activities into areas that really didn't make a whole lot of sense. So what Maggie has done is really put them in the right places. If you go back to the 3.3, that was historically what we had paid for recycling. And we also left it a little bit hefty on that because mm-hmm. the things that we don't know is the market fluctuates. And so just to give us an ability, if right now we're essentially our it's helping us out, make it, now we're not making so money, but we're not paying as much as processing fee because the commodities are doing good, but it has potential really affecting us. And so in reality, also part of that the expenses that we have incurred on the plastic program is not associated with what we're paying by Fusion, but also some of the costs that we're paying for bailing the material that is being shipped out as well. So, mm-hmm. Those are some of the factors that as we move along, we need to consider. The other thing is in terms of the plastic program, some of those payments, when we first originally were looking at that, Councilmember Kasachik and the city manager's office were thinking that they could probably use some of the ARPA money to offset that cost. but obviously we did not follow, we could not meet that criteria. So therefore, on the ARPA or the federal money. So then that's what we had to pay it out of the, out of the, out of the department's budget. So originally that was really the intent.
Okay. The other was, of course, there was a renegotiation of the contract with the MRF, I recall. Is it over a year ago? Has my time sense slipped?
You're muted, Carlos.
That is correct. That's part of it. So then that's when the previous amendment sunsetted, and then that's when we negotiated the new agreement, which is reflected of the new fees and revenue distribution that you see that.
Right. Well, having Hefty on board help us with the plastic waste diversion costs?
Not necessarily. No, I don't think so. No, he won't.
Okay.
Because a lot of those expenses and revenue don't really come to the city coffers, and essentially all we're essentially providing is a collection of the plastics, and the processing and use of that, it's borne by a third party, and so there's probably going to be a small reduction on that end, but not significant to be able to tell you, hey, this is the amount. So all those expenses are being borne by, will be borne by, the shipping and processing will be borne by Hefty Renew.
But it should cut down on what you're paying for storage.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Any other questions?
Just wanted to just to wrap up, if there are no other questions, is that the fiscal year 25 budget should be adopted tentatively at the end of May, and then hope with plans for the final budget adoption at the beginning of June. So when we meet in June, I will add another column to our report where I add the fiscal year 25, whichever stage the budget is at that point. If it's not totally adopted, I can just put the tentative there. So you can get a sense of what we'll have to work with for fiscal year 25.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay.
Have a good afternoon.
Well, item 5 is real easy because none of us met. So, you know, Frank has been trying to add stuff from the Environmental Engineering Subcommittee into our waste diversion collections and education. So I don't know what's going to happen with that subcommittee unless more people want to be involved. And same with finance. So I don't know what the future of those two subcommittees are going to be when we're down to 6 committee members. So just sending that out, something to think about.
Did we even get a MRF report?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
I don't know. It wasn't probably, I didn't see it included with this information. So we'll try to catch up on that.
It probably was not, but it was probably sent as part of the waste diversion agenda. And so that's probably where it was included. I can't see it, but to confirm whether that was distributed or not. But if not, we'll track one down and send it to everybody else.
That would be good. At least we can see how we're doing with our costs. It looks like the costs are coming down since the revenue reports really showed a difference.
Well, item 6 for future agenda items. Do any of you have items that you would like discussed?
Well, I don't know how much Trevor will know by then, but certainly are always interesting to know on their how successful their waste diversion was and how the process worked this year.
I'm happy to share that. No numbers yet. Move out hasn't finished. But I have heard that things are going better this year than they went last year, at least in terms of some of our things walking off. Has not happened, at least yet. So, and it seems like we're getting some better material streams. So hopefully more good news to share next month.
Okay. Hey, Trevor, how far along in the process are you at this point?
Everyone has to be out of the dorm. Well, with the exception of resident assistants, RAs, everyone has to be out of the dorms by, I think, noon tomorrow. So the vast majority of move out is complete at this point. We're sort of doing some spot checks. We will take all of the bins that we have out right now to support campus pantry food collections on Monday, I believe. And then Suburban Miners, who is the our largest partner for the vast majority of materials, should have things pretty much wrapped up next week as well. And then there will be sort of a final pickup by Suburban Miners. I think it's like 2 to 4 weeks after move out is officially over, but it's basically anything and everything that students will leave in their rooms. So after move out is completed, there will be another sort of round to make sure rooms are fully cleaned. Anything that's left behind is considered abandoned property. We have to hold that for a certain period of time before we can have Suburban Miners come and pick it up.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that. Anyone else?
Chris, you mentioned that Frank Bonillas wanted to present something to the Engineering and Environmental Committee. Is that something that he could present to our committee, the whole committee?
Well, so since Environmental Engineering hasn't been meeting as a subcommittee, Frank has been presenting information to the Waste Diversion Collections and Education. But and we try to report on that. But if there's something you guys, if you really want to hear one of Frank's reports, I think he could come to ESAC. What do you think, Carlos?
Yeah, I believe so. I think he can prepare his report during the full ESAC. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So that could.
Yeah, I seem to recall last year we talked about maybe turning back the committees and having things presented to the whole committee. Do you guys remember that? It seemed like we were going in that direction.
I think we try to meet that by the reports from the subcommittees. I think Maggie's doing a good job of keeping us with the information we need for finance, although we're not going into the detail that we would do in the finance subcommittee. So really, it's the environmental engineering that's kind of being left out in the cold. So
I think it would be useful to have him report on what's happening with the composting, with the, you know, it was good to have the haulers forum report and hear some of the things that were brought forth to the people who are using the landfill. And it just made me, as you were talking, Carlos, thinking of all the presentations we'd heard about this PAD and the development of the landfill and realizing that there are a lot of other people who haven't heard all those. And I'm certain that the people who are using the landfill were very happy to know what changes were coming along and not just operating off of rumors. So it seems to me it was a great, excellent idea to have the folks come. Yeah. And maybe next time there'll be even more because they'll learn that there's valuable information being exchanged. So I think those kinds of things coming to us overall would work right. Well with Frank picking a couple of major issues each.
The route changes. Yeah. Stuff like that. So, okay.
Well, even just the discussion that mattresses falling off or damaging equipment is a kind of interesting concept. What are people supposed to do with mattresses? You know, we do see them out hanging out along the roadside to be picked up in the brush and bulky, but you know, what else? The Free Cycle has mattresses probably every day, or two or three mattresses that are out there. What are people supposed to do with them, Carlos?
Obviously, the only solution for us is still continue to landfill them. The issue is that at the end of the day, they're very difficult to compact. And yeah. And even though you run a big roll-off or a big compactor over them, they still pop up. Okay. And as much as it, and even if you try to put 6 inches of cover or even a little bit more than that, over time, the trucks, essentially they pump them out. And so you may not see it, but the wires of those, all those matrices essentially become distorted. All of a sudden they go into the axle of those vehicles trying to back up and dump. And so when they pull forward, they're basically are bringing with them essentially a mattress. And so even though we try to do a good job in terms of providing the cover, still by the movement of the vehicles getting in and getting out, those mattresses get dislodged and essentially again end up in the rear axle of one of those trucks. And that's what causes damages. And those are the concerns that they bring up. So in reality, as you look at it, we want to be more sophisticated. We should be able to divert those mattresses. We should be able to have a mattress essentially diversion machine that would basically pulls away the fabrics from the mattresses and do that. Those machines are very expensive and they're very high maintenance. And it's really the trick on where do we pull them. You may have a machine, but again, when they're convoluted in the waste stream, again, what mechanism do you bring to the table to be able to pull them out? Getting them processed. Yes, you can create an incentive really for folks really to bring them and divert them ahead of time, but you're still going to have those issues that every once in a while you're going to have a mattress and you're still going to end up on creating some damages as well. So it's one of those things that how many times does that happen? I would say in terms of our trucks, it happens maybe once every 3 months. So it happens, but it's not something that happens every single day, too.
I also want to mention that I've been to Los Reales twice in the last 2 weeks, and both times I've had trouble because the dust is really bad there. I understand it's kind of hard to keep track because there's so much traffic going in and out of there, but it's getting kind of dusty in the both times that I went. Other than that, though, it seemed like it was very efficient. Both times I was able to go in and out, and as well as everybody else there. But the only problem I had was the dust on the roadside itself.
Was it created by others, or you were creating the dust?
Well, I wasn't doing that. I was driving pretty slow, and it was trucks were making all that dust. But I also noticed that there weren't any birds in both those times that I was there. That seemed to me kind of unusual because birds seem to be there all the time. Is there a reason for that, or just they're just not around first?
There's times that there is and I'm not know this is the time what happened is there is a company that goes out and trains at Los Reales. They have a hawk, and that hawk essentially is trained really to essentially deter the birds, and so it does help out. And we don't bring him on board on our own, but he does ask us really to be there every once in a while, and it does a trick really to deter the birds away from that. So it's seasonal too, I'm not sure what kind of led to that, but there's plenty of birds all the time that I've been there too as well. So it's interesting that you didn't see any of those.
I think these questions show that we need to have Frank come essentially every month and talk about an issue that he has and allow us to ask questions, because these have been, I think, very interesting observations and questions that we have.
Ms. Mark, and I was going to suggest is if we maybe the Waste Diversion Committee still meets every month, maybe the other two subcommittees, if there's topics, maybe we can allow them really to come in, maybe not every month, but maybe take turns, almost like every other month, to be able to, hey, it's a report from an engineering, the next one from essentially from the environmental. So that way there's some updates and we kind of keep the ball rolling. And as you recall, the reasons why this committee set up those subcommittees is really to ensure that those meetings were not basically 4 hours long, because that's what they used to be, 4 hours long. It's really just to be able to meet individually and really be able to get some of the work done and then report back at this main meeting. And that was really one of the reasons why it happened. So if maybe one of the things we consider in the interim, or you can consider in the interim, would be is maybe the ones that you still meet the spirit and intent of the waste diversion, but some of the other subcommittees we can plan 1 month, maybe this one, next month maybe the other one, and at least you continue to rotate that and not really taking a whole lot of time on that, because in some of those areas there may not be a whole lot to report every month, but maybe there's something that could be reported every other month. So just food for
that. That sounds like a good idea, though.
Yeah.
Because there's another thing I mentioned to Frank a couple months ago, why isn't there any kind of signage to, because if you don't go there often enough, there's a long line of traffic, and then there's a cone that between the two lines as you go into the facility. If you haven't gone there often enough, you don't know which line you're supposed to go in. Mm-hmm. There should be some sort of signage. And that way, if you haven't been there in a long time, you'll know which line you're supposed to be in. Mm-hmm. That way it avoids confusion for those who have not gone there that often. And I also noticed that you don't really, is there any reason why there's not another route where you can just go straight to household hazardous waste and not stay in line? Because if you have nothing but household hazardous waste, there's no need for you to be in that big line.
That's correct. And we try to have a spotter in there. You're right. So yeah, there should be more of a delineation of really a bypass lane if you're going to go drop off essential recyclables, or if you're going to go to the HHW facility. Yes, that is correct. And that's something that we can work on. Yes.
Okay. Well, if there aren't any more future agenda items, we can move to item 7. I don't see anybody who wants to do a call to the audience. And then we can move to item 8 for adjournment. And it's 5 o'clock on the dot. So another early get out meeting. So we'll see you next month.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. See you.
Thank you.
Bye now. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yep. See you bright and early. Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Happy hour.
Thank you.
Yes. Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Sure.